This is Real Ideal Radio, episode number 4.
Powering on.
Don't let your dreams be dreams.
Dude, I feel like I'm in a crossing chain and you still want to make it way better. The more you're interested in the world around you, the better off you'll be.
This is Real Ideal Radio, a show about marketing, media, management, and a whole lot of music. This is Miles on the Dials. I've got an awesome show today. Today we are talking with co-founder of Sales First Recruiting, Adam Morris. He's been working with job seekers for many years, and in the interview, Adam delivers a plethora of powerful lessons and great advice he's learned along his career path. Just a joy and a pleasure chatting with him the other day. We're also going to hear from Papaya, Jack Johnson, and Loud Lucy. Got some music for you as well. Very pumped up about this show. This is going to be totally awesome. Yeah. We're going to jump into some headlines here in just a moment. I've got a great conversation with Adam coming up, and we've got some sweet music that I just discovered yesterday. Fresh, new music. Very good, very cool. I don't even know how to pronounce the name of the band yet, but maybe you can help me out with that. So let's jump right in. We've got a packed show and no time to waste. So here's the weeklies. Portland has broken a record for the most days of rain since October 1st, 2016 to now. It's like 145 days of rain since then, which will just make this summer so much sweeter, don't you think? The revolution will be podcast. Bernie Sanders has launched a podcast called The Bernie Sanders Show. Will we start hearing more podcasts from prominent politicians? We'll have to wait and see. Marshawn Lynch is officially an Oakland Raider. Round of applause. Can't wait to see Oakland play next season. Website of the week is theartistunion.com. Theartistunion.com. The Artist Union is the best platform for artists to organically grow their fan base. We provide free tools for artists of any size to better market themselves and expand their following. Just listening or reading their About Me page here on their website. Growth is the most important thing for today's new artist. With an active fan base, artists can monetize and provide a living for themselves in new and creative ways. We believe that talent no longer needs to depend on traditional music labels, marketing engines that serve their own needs first. The Artist Union has helped and witnessed artists grow from being a bedroom DJ to touring worldwide and having a massive fan base without ever needing a music label. We are entrepreneurs, engineers, artists, and most importantly, music lovers. And they are committed to helping you find your most dedicated fans and giving them a beautiful music experience. Looks like a pretty cool website. I mention it because this next track I found as a free download last night on theartistunion.com. I was actually on the way to school listening to the TuneIn Radio app. And I think the station I was listening to was Herdwell Radio, H-E-A-R-D, Herdwell Radio. And then this track comes on, and I thought to myself, I'm definitely playing this track tomorrow because it is very cool, very upbeat. It is very summertime, very Vegas, very positive, and it's got a great groove. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right into this track. I'm going to play this one for you. This is Papaya, P-A-P-A space Y-A, Papaya, and this track is Sunny.
California dime, you were working it right. Shot collar got golden eyes.
I was here.
That was Papaya with Sunny. I was just checking out their Facebook page here, and it says, emerging electronic pop act, Papaya, will make you feel like you're lounging beachside on a private island in a Corona commercial. I would have to agree. Okay, so I'm very excited to play my conversation with Adam Morris for you. After editing, it's a solid 37 minutes. He's got a great story, full of lessons and do's and don'ts, advice and quotes. At one point in our conversation, he was all,
don't let your dreams be dreams.
And then I was all,
baby, you are so money and you don't even know it.
So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with friend and co-founder of Sales First Recruiting. This is Adam Morris. Okay, joining me on the show today is husband, father of three, co-founder of Sales First Recruiting, and good friend of mine. It is Adam Morris. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miles.
All right, so we are going to talk about your experience in the working world and as an entrepreneur. I've got a list of questions here I'd like to ask you. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right, perfect.
Let's do it.
All right, awesome. So first question, let's just start by walking us through your career path from graduation, college graduation, to today.
Okay, so I graduated from University of Oregon in 2002. Should have been 2001, but I took some time off in the middle of school and just lived in my fraternity house.
Oh, wow.
Which should not have been allowed, but we were the kind of fraternity that didn't enforce such things.
Oh.
So I knew that I wanted to go into sales. I just had a feeling that I had a natural proclivity for it. I interviewed with all the standard companies that hire fresh grads.
Right.
Cintas, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, every booth that is hanging out at the career fairs, I interviewed hard with. And I thought for sure that I was their savior. Right. And once they hired me, they could rest because their business was saved. And they all passed on me.
Hmm.
All but one. This small, quickly growing company called Trinity Carpet led by a couple guys who were pretty aggressive in the marketplace, really wanted to grow the company. They'd done a really good job doing it. So we sold flooring to builders.
Okay.
And at the time, there was a huge housing boom. And so my job was to go find builders to do business with us and manage their accounts and sell them hardwood and carpet and tile and stuff like that. It was really challenging. It was sort of a rude awakening to what work really was, because it was actual real work.
Right.
But ultimately, it was not the right fit for me at all. Without fail, I screwed something up major, you know, in each and every product or project, which is pretty normal, actually, right? Like, that's just sort of what is expected in that industry. The vendors are going to screw something up big, and then there's a battle between the builders and the vendor, and they will call you every name in the book. I was called various R-rated expletives.
Yikes.
And here I am, a 21-year-old kid thinking like, oh my gosh, is this how it is?
Wow.
So, you know, a day after just getting read the riot act and, you know, called these horrible names, they'd call me back and ask me to bid on another project for them. And I was like, really? I just screwed everything up for you guys.
Right.
And they'd say, well, yeah, like, what's the problem?
Wow.
And so, after a year of that, and I promised myself I would stick it out for a year, I moved to a new industry that was a little more traditional B2B sales. And it worked out really well for me. I went to this place called PrimePay.
Okay.
And they are a worthy competitor of Paychex and ADP, these companies that own or provide payroll services. And it was there that I really discovered that I was pretty good at sales. After about 9 to 11 months or so, I was one of the top producers in the office, and they asked me if I wanted to move to Seattle to go lead the Seattle office.
Oh, wow.
And my answer was almost right away, just yes.
Sure.
And being really young in my career, I was very achievement focused. And I didn't stop to really think about my career path. I just thought, this is a chance to be in leadership and to climb the corporate ladder, and I'm just going to do it.
Right.
So I was dating my now wife, Renata, at that time. And I just told her we should do it. And she was able to transfer with her company, which was Columbia Sportswear. So it worked out really well. And we had a great adventure in Seattle, too.
Oh, wow.
But I pretty much failed at that leadership position.
Interesting.
I wasn't really ready for that role. A lot of my ability in sales was instinctive. And what I thought was the right thing to do in a sales situation turned out to be mostly right. But I really didn't have any sort of a foundation of knowledge, right? I had read no books on sales. I hadn't gone through any sales training. I never really took sales leadership very seriously. Right. I just thought, I know how to do this, and I'm me, and I'll lead this office to success. And I was wrong, and I was miserable.
Holy smokes.
I didn't like it. And it was it ended up being uninteresting to me. I just didn't have the gravitas to really do the job that was asked of me.
Right, I see.
And it was a humbling experience. And so, I don't know, maybe after 6 months, 7 months there, I left. And I went to go work for this really eccentric guy named Rod Asher. And he owned a tech recruiting firm, very small, but a really strong reputation. They did a lot of tech recruiting in the Bay Area, but out of Bellevue.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it was just it was another wake-up call for me in my young career. And I wasn't good at it. And it was yet another position that I tried and failed at. And so 6 months later, after I never made a placement, they let me go. And what made it really awkward is that was one of the days where I took the bus to work.
Oh, gosh.
And there was something going on that day where, like, the buses were, like, delayed or canceled. Wow. And I had to just sit around in Bellevue, like, you know, waiting for a ride home.
After they let you go?
After they let me go.
Like, there's no bus and you're just...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
So what's interesting is I was let go right before, I think, summertime. And I spent my summer playing two-hand touch football with, like, the middle schoolers in my neighborhood. And I was kind of beaten down. And one of my good friends, Chris Shablock, he owns West Coast Careers, a recruiting firm up in Seattle, which I'll talk about later.
Okay.
He told me that he wanted to get me back to work. He told me that he wanted to place me at this company called T-Mobile. And after the first interview, I called him up and I said, I think I'm going to get an offer.
Right.
And he kind of put me in my place and he's like, you think you're going to get an offer? This is like a total A opportunity. And you think that after one interview, they're going to make you an offer. I said, well, I really do. And he called me later. He said, you're right. There's a few more interviews, but they thought the interview went about as well as, you know, could possibly be expected.
Right.
By the way, I will share this with your audience. One of the tactics I used in the interview, because they asked me what happened at Rod Asher & Associates, and I said, well, they fired me because I never made a placement. There wasn't anything like, oh, it was a mutual decision, or, you know, I discovered it wasn't a right fit. I was like, no, I was really humbled. I sucked at that job, and they fired me, and I thought that I'd be good at recruiting because I was good at sales, and I was wrong. So I really want to get back into sales, and I want to get with a company that can take my natural instinct, but then really invest in me. And I know that T-Mobile has all these resources for training and great leadership, and that's what I'm looking for now. So ultimately, they did make me an offer, and I had a couple of other offers at that time. But I was really hesitant to go back into the sales world. And I remember I called up my dad and I asked him, I said, like, what's my responsibility? Is it to find a job that would make me happy? Or is it to find a job where I can make the most money? Or is it, you know, and I think at that time I was engaged to Renata. And is it my job to be a provider for our family now that I'm about to be married? And I don't remember exactly what he said, but he basically said, you are in your, you know, early to mid 20s. Your job is to go out there and make money. Uh-huh. And so I took the T-Mobile job, basically based off his advice.
Interesting.
So T-Mobile ended up being the exact thing that I needed in my career because I had so many mentors there. Sales managers, directors, VPs, all these people who were totally accessible, who had so much knowledge and experience to share. And we had all sorts of resources for trainings, and I took advantage of all of it. And that's where my career as a sales professional was reset.
Wow.
And that laid the groundwork for the rest of my conventional success?
That is a long list of lessons and advice in that one story. Wow, Adam, that's fantastic. What a journey.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So there is, a couple false starts there in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty in an interview, we can just get right into it. That's fantastic. What a great story for everybody to kind of pull from. Going back to dad as your confidant, getting the advice. And then, just taking advantage of all the opportunities that you found there, whereas some might, just kind of coast through. You were hungry, sounded like.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move on to this next question. That was great. Thank you so much for sharing that. So you might have actually touched on this a little bit. But you're at T-Mobile now.
Mm-hmm.
You are now the co-founder of Sales First Recruiting. So tell us about that leap there and what inspired you to start, found that business.
So I ended up spending about 8 years at T-Mobile. And this is on the business side as opposed to the retail side. And I had roughly three different positions at T-Mobile. My very last position there, I had a position called Senior National Account Manager. And I had a handful of accounts like Nike, Evergreen Aviation, some of the bigger accounts or bigger employers in Oregon and a little bit in Washington. Like I had Expedia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What drove me to start my own business actually was fear. So after that long, T-Mobile, it seemed like they were about to merge with a new company like every 6 months. There was a Sprint. And then we actually announced that we were going to merge with AT&T. One of the things about working at T-Mobile, especially on the enterprise side, which is the national account side, is that I would go into Nike with maybe a team of three or four people. And every once in a while, I'd spot the AT&T team coming in or leaving, and there might be like 10 or 15 of them.
Mm.
Right? We're talking tremendous amount of resources from our competitors being spent on their national accounts. And so we were, one of our core values at T-Mobile was go big, stay scrappy.
Mm.
And I just knew that if we were going to merge with AT&T, I'd be gone in a second. Because they already had a big team of 15. They didn't need some guy from T-Mobile with the same contacts at the same account.
Right.
So I called up my good friend Chris Shablock, who owned West Coast Careers, and he had been bugging me for a few years to start West Coast Careers in Portland. But I didn't really feel I was ready for it yet because I had a really good thing going at T-Mobile. I was a mid-market sales rep for about 3 years, and I was a B2B sales manager for Portland for a few years. And then I left the mid-market and went to the enterprise side. And I was really happy with my career progression. I was really happy with the amount of growth that I was experiencing. But at this time, with this AT&T merger that was announced, which never happened, by the way, I think it was the FTC, there just wasn't enough support federally for the merger to actually go through. At any rate, I had twins on the way.
Wow.
And I said, hey, I think I'm ready to do this. And out of all the cockamamie schemes I've had of businesses I wanted to start, this one, for whatever reason, we just did it. That's all there was to it. We set a date and then we did it.
Wow.
And so what happened is I think it was January, I made the choice that I was going to move up to Seattle, live with my friend Chris for about 3 months, and he was going to teach me how to run his company, West Coast Careers. And once the attorneys got involved, it actually became a franchise. So I've essentially franchised his company in Portland, although we were the only franchise ever.
Right.
So I thought, what's probably going to happen is that after a couple weeks at T-Mobile, no one's going to see me and they're probably going to fire me. And I'm going to be in the backyard of their headquarters. I'm probably going to get fired in 2 weeks, but that's 2 weeks of income. So I'll handle it. So what I did is I moved. I took all my T-Mobile stuff and I brought it with me to Seattle, and I decided I was just going to give it my all and work full time at West Coast Careers and full time at T-Mobile.
Wow.
2 weeks went by. I never heard anything from anybody. I was hitting my numbers, just no problem. 3 months goes by. I've now moved back to Portland. Right. And I started an office of West Coast Careers, and I moved my T-Mobile desk in there. Now we're at 6 months. Now we're at 12 months, and I've been working two full-time jobs, probably doing 80 hours a week. And I think I was the number five, maybe the number seven rep in the nation.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was in no danger of getting fired, but what was really, really wearing on me beside the long hours was I felt like a double agent. I felt like I was living two lives, and I had to keep my income from T-Mobile because I wasn't making the money at West Coast Careers yet. It was enough to pay the bills, but it was not enough to do anything that I like to do. But come December, I gave my notice, and it felt so liberating. It felt amazing.
Wow.
And just to be able to answer the T-Mobile phone and say, oh, I'm no longer your rep, let me introduce you to the guy who is, it was great. And I could finally really start to market my company without fear of getting fired.
Right.
And I struggled with a little bit about the ethics of what I was doing, but I kept on falling back to this idea that I was producing, so what's the problem?
Yeah, absolutely.
Others might disagree with that, and that's okay. I just did what I had to do there. But that's how I started West Coast Careers. And just in the last few weeks, we ended the franchise agreement with my partners, and I rebranded to Sales First, but I'm still really close with the West Coast Careers guys.
You're listening to Real Ideal Radio.
You know, oftentimes people like to know how a company's founders met. Can you tell us a little bit about how you and Chris met originally?
Sure. So when I was a sales manager at PrimePay, I was one of his first clients because he had just started West Coast Careers with Ed.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they were trying to wine and dine their clients and trying to make it themselves. And they invited me to a Seahawks game with them. And I ended up buying season tickets and sitting with Chris. To this day, I still have those tickets. I don't make it up to all the Seahawks games, but I try to go to two or three a year. Sometimes I only make it to one, though. And we just became fast friends. And, you know, even through working together, we've done a really good job compartmentalizing work and friendship. During the hours of 8 to 5, we were Chris and Adam. And after those hours and on the weekends, we were Shabby and Adam, right? A totally different set of individuals who didn't talk about work. We just talked about all the normal things that guys do.
You know, I was looking at your LinkedIn a while back, and you majored in journalism at University of Oregon, fellow Duck alum. So I want to talk a little bit about that. How has studying journalism helped you on your career path?
I think immensely. The structure of writing, The idea of putting a ton of thought into carefully crafted messages, whether they're delivered, you know, digitally or orally, all these different vehicles for communicating, all of them just take a great deal of thought. And I'd say if there's anything you learn in the J School, it's that your communications need a lot of thought behind them.
You're listening to Real Ideal Radio.
What is the best advice you ever received?
My first sales manager at T-Mobile was this woman named Shelley Davis. She didn't necessarily give me advice, but she was sort of maniacal about leading our team. Every year, our Seattle mid-market team was in place to be a top five market because of the talent that she recruited. And her demands on us. So she never said, Adam, here are some words of wisdom. But what she did say is that if I didn't get to winner's circle, that it was my fault. You know, every company has their winner's circle or president's club or whatever. But I never even thought about making that a goal until she told me that I had to. And I made it. I ended up being, my first year at T-Mobile, my first full year, I ended up being the number 21 rep in the nation out of, I think, 450 reps.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, on one hand, it was my hard work. But on the other hand, I was really, really scared to let Shelley down, because she was so tough on me about getting there. So it wasn't advice. It was more just her systems that, and just the way she led, that made me realize that if you want to really succeed, you can, and it might suck, but you can do it. And before that, I just didn't even have the slightest clue about what it took to get there.
Right. And so what does that say, you know, about your relationship with Shelley? You know, the fact that you didn't want to let her down, you know, like it's almost like you're doing it for yourself, but you're like, I can't let Shelley down. You know, that says a lot about like the relationship that, you know, you must have had with her.
So Shelley and I are still really close. But I was more scared of Shelley. We all were. She broke all the rules. Actually, she recommended a book to me called First Break All the Rules. But it was, I mean, she didn't care that much for HR or for professionalism. She cared about getting the very most out of people. In a lot of ways, she was like a really, really tough coach, like on a team.
Wow. She's results oriented.
She is.
Sounds like you really, you know, you learned a lot from her.
Yeah.
Did you have a big break that substantially moved you forward in your career, and what was it?
It was just getting hired at T-Mobile. However, when I think about our audience, I think it's important to note that when you find a place that you can call home, like if you think, hey, there are things in this organization that really meet or really fit with my values, that it's up to you to really make it your big break. And that can be a lot of things, right? It could be you appreciate the leadership, or you like the vision of the company. Maybe they treat employees the way you feel employees should be treated. Maybe it's just the financial opportunity is there to earn. But whatever it is that fits with what you think is important, you kind of have to make it your big break. otherwise, if you go just looking for the best company and you hop around, you're never going to find it. You just have to find a place that you think you can make your own and then just work super hard there.
That's some great advice right there. Yeah, never thought of it like that. When you find a place you like, make it the big break that you're looking for.
Yeah.
You're listening to Real Ideal Radio.
So you have a nice trajectory throughout your work experience. What is one thing people wanting to grow and progress in their careers should know?
Yeah. I would say that if you really focus on exceeding the job description, that's really the foundation for growth in your career. What generally doesn't happen is somebody, let's say there's a leadership position open to lead the department that you're in. 9 times out of 10, the person that is going to get that role is already picked for it, right? The director or the VP, they already say, hey, I mean, this is obviously miles to grab, right?
Right.
So don't show up at the company and blend in with the crowd and then expect to grow with that organization. You really should be the obvious no-brainer pick for that next position if you actually are going to get it. And of course, every once in a while, there's a surprise interview and somebody gets a job that maybe they didn't expect to. But you just have to be special in the position you're in so that it's an obvious one.
Great advice. Thank you. What is the most important skill needed to be a successful entrepreneur?
So there's a lot of debate here.
Okay.
I'll just give you my opinion.
Great.
And it's just people skills. It is being able to demand performance from your people while simultaneously caring about them as individuals. If all you do is drive people, they'll eventually leave. And if all you do is care about them, you may not have the performance you need for the business to succeed. You have to find a way to do both. And not everybody can do that. But of course, every business is totally different. In the recruiting industry, you know, of course we have some, you know, software and tools and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. for the most part, in Portland anyway, there's 10 employees and we have phones and email.
Right.
And that's how we do our jobs. And so we're definitely in the people business. And so my capital are my people. And I just think if you can find a way to keep your people coming to work and find a way to push them, that's the number one thing you need to succeed.
All right, cool. Changing gears here, Adam. So now I'd like to know if there are any book recommendations, any kind of powerful books that you've read or any recommendations that you have for aspiring entrepreneurs.
Well, the first book that I have people read when they start at Salesforce Recruiting is, and I think this was published in like the 1920s, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Love
it
that.
Is so simple and basic and so effective. And it has nothing to do with recruiting, but it has everything to do with communicating with other human beings who have feelings and egos and learning how to reach those people as individuals is so important. So that's the number one book, but I mean, I read countless books on leadership. One of the coolest ones mm-hmm. that I've read recently was this book called Extreme Ownership.
Oh, okay.
Written by these two Navy SEALs who took the experiences that they had on the battlefield in Iraq and applied those principles in leadership
wow.
to business. And I was sort of skeptical, thinking, all right, like, I don't know how applicable it's going to be. It's 100% applicable. Whoa. And the book is so cool. And the whole idea is about taking real accountability as an owner. You know, just recently I had a disagreement with one of my recruiters about some messaging that we wanted to deliver to a candidate. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, no, you told me to say this. And I said, no, I told you to say this. And I had just finished reading this book. And I said, well, you know what? This is clearly my fault, no matter what, because I should have taken the time to sit down and make sure you totally understood it. So no matter how this turns out, it was my fault. And I apologize for that. And it just completely changed the whole dynamic of the conversation. He started apologizing to me afterward. And I said, no, this really is my fault. And it was a busy conversation, and I should have made it a non-busy conversation.
Yeah.
And so those were the cool lessons from that book. There's another book. This isn't necessarily about leadership, but it's a really cool book to read, like in juxtaposition to some of these business and leadership books. And sure. It's I won't use the actual, I'll just say The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fudge, but really, really cool book about prioritizing life. And, I always find it nice to read some sort of book about life and like spirituality while you're reading these business books, just so you can stay balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great book. I thank you for that one.
Yeah.
I passed that one on. That's Mark Maron's
book. That's right. Yeah,
great book. Thank you so much. And how awesome is that disarming kind of quality when you just come with a real true and honest accountability in your example with your recruit. Yeah, that's just to hear someone say, you know what, this was on me, and no matter what, this is, you know, and here's what I should have done. That's just a great story. Okay, so we are almost ready to wrap things up here, Adam. A couple more questions. This last one is also thinking about PSU college graduates. You know, this spring term, we've got a new class of graduates about ready to graduate. What advice do you have for PSU students when they start their new careers?
Mm-hmm. So I work with my brother, and he's about 7 years younger than me. And so normally I'm, you know, giving him advice and telling him what to do. When he told me something maybe last summer that really stuck with me.
Oh, wow.
He said that the world is not very forgiving of people who are playing when they should be working, but the world is equally not very forgiving of people who work too hard when they should spend some time playing. And I don't know if I could tell any one person what the right balance is, but I do know that it's up to you to be conscious of that balance. And if you don't give enough attention to your career, you'll end up floating. But if you give too much attention to it, you'll miss out on all the things that you have a career for in the first place.
Right. Wow. Great advice there too. That's wonderful. All right. Now, Adam, this is the last question, little bonus question. Now, this one's just for fun. Is there a song that you would like to dedicate or shout out to anyone out there in the world, and why?
A song. oh man, you know, my problem is I don't know names of songs.
Okay. so we kind of like do a little dedication thing at the end of these that I'd like to do just for fun. And if there's a favorite song, someone you'd like to kind of shout out, if you can remember, or
I got something.
Oh, okay. Awesome. What you got?
Okay. I want to dedicate Jack Johnson's music.
Okay.
To our constituents, because he found accidentally what he was really good at, and then he just totally owned it.
Nice. Perfect. All right. We will make that happen. We've got some Jack Johnson coming up. Adam, first, I just want to say thank you so much for coming and doing this little Q&A with me. This has been awesome. I learned a ton.
Cool.
And I'm sure that anybody listening to this will also learn a ton from you. So thank you so much. And I hope that here someday in the near future, we can do it again.
Cool. Thanks, Miles.
How about that? That was Adam Morris, and we're going to get right into it. I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. There are so many great lessons and stories that he shared. That was just a joy, so thanks again, Adam. That was fantastic. We're going to get right into some Jack Johnson. This, I believe, was one of his very first hits. This is Jack Johnson going out to the constituents. Adam Morris will dedicate this song to you. This is Jack Johnson's Flake.
I know she said it's all right, but you can make it up next time. I know she knows it's not right, there ain't no use in lying. Maybe she thinks I know something, maybe, maybe she thinks it's fine. Or maybe she knows something I don't. I'm so tired. I'm so tired of trying. It seems to me that maybe it pretty much always means no. So don't tell me. You might just let it. Oftentimes we're lazy, it seems to stand in my way. Cause no one, no, not no one likes to be let down. I know she loves the sunrise, no longer sees it with her sleeping eyes. And I know that when she said she's gonna try, well, it might not work because of other ties. And I know she usually has some other ties. And I wouldn't wanna break on, I wouldn't wanna break on. Maybe she'll help me to untie this, but until then, well, I'm gonna have to lie to you. It seems to me that maybe it pretty much always means no. So don't tell me, you might just let it go. And oftentimes we're lazy, it seems to stand in my way. Cause no one, no, not no one likes to be let down. It seems to me that maybe it pretty much always means no. So don't tell me, you might just let it go. Baby, the further you fall, even with all the money in the whole wide world. Please, please, please don't pass me. Please, please, please don't pass me. Please, please, please don't pass me by. Everything you know about me now, baby, you're gonna have to change.
Hey, what's up? We're Angels and Airwaves.
Hi, we're 21 Pilots.
Hi, we are Churches.
Hey, this is Ben from Death Cab for Cutie.
What's up, it's Paris.
Hello, I'm Matty, that's George. We're in the 1975.
Hi, this is DJ J-Bop, host of All the Singles Ladies, every Tuesday at noon. Tune in to hear music from those bands and more.
You're listening to KPSU on the campus of Portland State University, streaming over the internet at kpsu.org for the student body, for the City of Roses, and beyond. KPSU is Portland's college radio.
Looking for a summer job? Let your resume bloom by adding the business minor. The 28-credit program has no admission requirements and is now offering condensed summer classes, allowing you to finish in as little as 2 terms. All 300-level classes count toward the Design Thinking and Innovation Cluster, maximizing your student dollars. Unlock your potential and let your resume bloom with the business minor. For more information, visit us at www.pdx.edu/sba/business minor.
KPSU presents the first ever AmFest, a free all-ages music festival inside the Smith Memorial Student Union on PSU's campus June 2nd, featuring 13 acts, including Little Star, Hemingway, The Hague, Robot Boy, Dog Mountain, Raphael Days, Pennyweight, Mood Beach, The Forever Agos, and me, Dryson the Alien. Music starts in Green Roots Cafe at noon. The festival will move to the 101 at 3 p.m. Snacks will be provided by PSPB. Sound and lighting presented by PSPS. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Tell the devil he can wait.
All right, it's Real Ideal Radio. This is Miles, and we are nearing the end of the show today. What a show it has been. It's been super fun. I got one more track for you. And let's see here. So this next one was released the year I graduated high school, back in 1995. One of my favorite 90s songs. This is Loud Lucy. Now, you may not have heard of Loud Lucy. They had one track. They're like a quintessential one-hit wonder. They did tour with Alanis Morissette in the mid-90s. And the band dissolved a few years after their debut album, Breathe. And then the singer of the band, Christian Lane, moved to Los Angeles, California to pursue a solo career and become involved with TV and film music. His songs have appeared in the films Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen and Wishcraft, and the ABC television show Men in Trees, among many others, according to Wikipedia. He was born 1 year before I was. So the odd thing about this song is that I cannot find the MP3 for this song anywhere. And believe me, I've looked over the years. Just it'll pop into my brain and I'll want to listen to the song. You cannot find it. If you can find this MP3, it's not on iTunes. The one thing that is on iTunes is the video. You can actually buy the music video for like $1.29. And it's on YouTube. So that's where I'm going to go with this one. But yeah, cannot find the MP3. So we're going to go right to YouTube. And I'm going to play this one here for you. This is what us Gen Xers were listening to back in the 90s. So thanks to Christian Lane for putting this group together. They were from Chicago. So this is Loud Lucy with Ticking. We'll be right back. All right. Thank you so much for listening today. This was super fun. Thanks again to my guest, Adam Morris. Coming up next week, famous studies, cover letters, and a lesson in viral video. So come back next Thursday, 12 to 1 p.m. right here on KPSU. Until then, have a great week and a better weekend.